all of you here virtually. So big welcome to the Mega C-Suite Virtual Edition. And it's our very first episode brought to you by Cyber Risk Meetup. And I'm your host for today. My name is Charmaine Tan. I am the founder of Cyber Risk Meetups. And my day job is actually also an executive advisor, where I just work with the CISOs or security leaders on their strategies and just helping them to bridge their business gaps. So really, really great to have all of you here today, and it is very exciting because for the first time, we have all our cyber riskers joining in from different parts of the world. For those who are not familiar with cyber risk meetups, we actually have been meeting about once every 3 months before the COVID situation, and we have been meeting in 6 different cities. So a big welcome to you guys here in Sydney. I'm actually broadcasting this live from Sydney, Australia at the moment. And also a big welcome to our cyber riskers from Melbourne, Brisbane, Perth. I know it's really early for you guys in Perth and Singapore. It's 9 a.m. over there, so a big welcome. And to our latest addition, our Tokyo chapter as well. So we have people coming in, logging in from Japan. So very, very excited. I also want to give a big shout out to our guests, or rather our new friends who are tuning in from the likes of the United States. I know it's late over there, and we have actually quite a few others. Let me read out. I saw people coming in from Portugal, Lebanon, Malaysia, Canada, India, Cambodia, and Nigeria as well. So This is fantastic. Yes, we have like lots of people gathering together, and I think it's a great thing to just see everyone coming in together as a big, you know, community. So that's exciting. All right. So for our very first episode, I'm so happy to have Dan Lawman here with me today. Dan, you can give a big wave.
Hello.
Yes. So Dan is actually, for those who don't know about the, actually, I have it here, the Cyber Risk Leaders book. Dan, so this is just a collection of insights of different CISOs or C-executives that I've spoken to over the last, I don't know, many years, from different countries and different industries as well. And Dan Lawman is one of the CISOs that's featured inside. He has shared quite a few exciting stories as well. So Dan and I were speaking recently, and he was meant to come here to Sydney actually this month to join us for the actual cyber risk meetup gathering. But because of what's been happening and the travel ban, unfortunately, he wasn't able to join us today. But he's joining us here virtually. So that's a treat for, you know, all of you here. So I'm going to do a quick introduction to Dan. So Dan is really well known internationally as a cybersecurity leader, a technologist. He's also an author as well. And he started his career at NSA. So for those who are not familiar, I think all of you should be familiar with it. It just stands for the National Security Agency. And this is the US Department of Defense national level intelligence agency. So Dan has served in leadership capabilities in many global organizations. I think what's really impressive is he has served as an executive for the state of Michigan for more than 17 years in different roles, from like the CIO to the CTO to the CSO to the CISO. So he has so much experience and a lot of amazing stories. So really excited to have you here to share some real, you know, real practical wisdom that all of us can learn from. And also maybe I think it's better to, you know, hear it directly from you on how you actually landed up being a CISO, because we have quite a few CISOs joining us from different countries as well. And I think they will benefit from learning about your background and how you ended up in this position.
Well, thank you, Charmaine. First of all, thanks so much for having me. It's wonderful. I'm in Michigan in the United States, which is Eastern time zone. So it's about 9 o'clock at night on March 31st here, while you're April 1st there in Sydney. So it's great to be with you. Thank you so much for having me. My background, again, NSA in England with NSA contractor, actually GCHQ. Also joined Michigan government in 1997. So 17 years in Michigan government, as Charmaine mentioned. Also was involved in a lot of different roles in Michigan. Was there during 9/11. Was actually involved in the whole move of a centralization in Michigan government. So basically bringing all the different agencies together under one IT shop. And so you're back. You see me now?
Yes.
You're back. Great.
Everybody's hearing you fine. Yeah, that's good. Keep going.
Great. I apologize to everyone in the audience. So I guess we lost you there for a minute. So yeah, I became the first CISO in all 50 states, actually. So I was the first state government CISO for all 50 states. And then I went on to become the chief technology officer in Michigan and then chief security officer at the end. So we had physical and cybersecurity together for the last 3 years. Then for the last 5 years, I've been with Security Mentor, which is a training company, and we do consulting and training, and also I do mentoring. I mentor a lot of CISOs around the world. So basically, that's kind of my background. I think, you know, the couple big things I just mentioned real quickly on my career that kind of most proud of at the end in Michigan government is we were the first state government to really put together a cyber range. So we called the Michigan Cyber Range, where we did a lot of testing. We'll tell some stories about that. Michigan Cyber Disruption Strategy and Michigan Cyber Civilian Core. So in emergencies like the ones we're having right now with the with the pandemic and other types of cyber emergencies, bringing together all the different staff and being able to have them work together, you know, as far as emergency response as volunteers. So we were really leading the nation in a lot of areas. We won a lot of awards. I think our team was selected as the top security team in the country more than half a dozen times. So we have a really some great team members that are really all over the country now and all over the world leading security organizations.
Just now you mentioned 9/11, right? I don't know if you've covered that already, but were there some practical lessons that you can share with us?
Yeah, I mean, I think you know, Michigan, one of the things that happened, we went into kind of a 10-year recession in Michigan. Really, the economy went down after 9/11. You know, it was in the United States. You know, it was a time of a lot of turmoil. I think a lot of probably very similar to what we're going to have at the end as we're coming out of this pandemic situation. And you know, there's a lot of centralization, a lot of new reorganizations that we had to deal with. We had a lot of budget issues. And I'm going to mention some of those at the end. But, you know, we always said, you know, initially after 9/11, we really didn't have a lot of budget. We, you know, it was a lot of tight budget times and, you know, really they weren't going to give. We put together a plan. We knew what we wanted to do in Michigan, but the management didn't have a lot of resources to give us funding. But, you know, we knew that we put together what we call a Michigan Cyber Initiative. And we actually wanted at the time, because we'd just come out of Y2K that gotten $35 million, we wanted $27 million, but it said, you know, there's no money for you. But what we did is we created a whole series of projects over the course of about 10 years. We were able to implement those projects and we got the kind of one piece at a time. So one of the messages to CISOs is always have a list ready to go of key projects that you're going to use. That you're going to run. We were able to go get some grant money from the Department of Homeland Security. We were able to get and use that money well, and we prioritized it well. And then in government, as money became available and we delivered on time and on budget, people were always coming back to us and saying, what else can you do? What more can you do? And so while we didn't get all the money we were looking for up front, over the course of about a decade, we were able to get funding, about two-thirds of that funding, and get all those projects completed. So I think, and I'm going to talk at the end about some tips, but really getting on the boats that are leaving the dock. So the projects that are getting funded, you need to be in those meetings. You need to be in those projects that are getting the high priority, even with this pandemic. You know, what is getting funded? Is it telework? Is it security around different projects? Making sure you're involved where the executive priorities are and making sure you're involved in those key meetings.
That's brilliant. Really good advice as well. And just now, you know, I don't know if you mentioned about CyberStorm, but CyberStorm is a fantastic initiative node. I know you have a lot of cool stories regarding that, but for those who haven't heard of CyberStorm before, it was launched in 2006. And it's actually a simulated exercise overseen by the Homeland of Department of Homeland of Security in the US. And it took place for, I believe, about 5 days in February in 2006. And that's really about the purpose of testing the nation's defense against digital espionage. So I understand like this simulation targeted like US organizations, but people from different countries were involved, from the UK, Australia even, and New Zealand. Yep. So maybe Dan, why don't you tell some of your cool stories regarding that?
Yeah, so yeah, it was a really amazing experience. So for those who want to think about Cyberstorm 1, they have them every 2 years now. So I think they're heading up to Cyberstorm 7 now. But we were one of the first states involved. And I know Australia and New Zealand was involved. And Michigan, people have seen the movie Die Hard 4, or called Live Free and Die Hard with Bruce Willis. If you watch that movie, that's what it was like in Cyberstorm 1. Everything was blowing up. You know, the first day of the exercise, this was like shortly a few years after, 5 years after 9/11. So the Capitol blew up. They blew up the data center. I mean, it was kind of over the top a little bit. I mean, things were, you know, all of our systems were hacked. All the systems were down. And our team was just kind of trying to respond. But I'll tell you, the later Cyberstorms were very much toned down. They were much more, more like the kind of incidents people are most familiar with. But the lesson I wanted to tell, Shemaine, was it was day four, so it was Thursday afternoon, and our team is completely worn out, and they told us we had to get our bull mainframe back up. And bull mainframes are not, it's a long time ago, there probably aren't a lot of bull mainframes around anymore, but at the time that was our whole financial system was running on a bull mainframe. And so they said, you've got to get this back up. Well, we did. One of them had been blown up when the data center bomb went off, supposedly. The other one was not working. So we had to buy a new bull mainframe. So literally the story was, they said in the script for Cyberstorm, we had to, they said, call on this phone and you'll get the bull mainframe headquarters in France. So we picked up the phone. And, the guy with the French accent, I can't imitate a French accent, but the guy in the French accent, literally, he's saying to us, we can sell you a bull mainframe. And we knew it was about $12 million for this. And we said, okay, we'll pay you $12 million. And he says, we want $47 million. And we're like, $47 million? We were like stunned. And I remember putting my hand over the phone and telling the whole team, was all around the room, they want $47 million for the mainframe. And everyone said, that's ridiculous. And anyway, we ended up negotiating. We got it for $25 million. But then the next day, so this is the lesson here. The next day, we have what they call a hot wash. And a hot wash, for those who do exercises, are like, what were the lessons learned? What did you do during the week? What did you like? What did you not like? And one of our best experts, who's now a very famous CISO around, I won't mention his name, but he was on my team at the time. He raised his hand. He said, Dan, that whole thing with the bull mainframe, that would never happen in real life. He said, they were basically extorting money from us. It was like we were being held for ransom. And no one would ever do that with computers. And so the funny thing, I hope the listeners can know where I'm going with this. We saw ransomware like 7 years before ransomware became even a big thing. Ransomware now, it's like last year it was the number one story in the United States for sure, probably around the world, for state governments and local governments being held for ransom. My point is, the lesson, we actually in that exercise saw ransomware a full 6-7 years before it became a big thing. We actually, and our team didn't even know it at the time, but we were there, DHS was actually, it was a scenario. It was pretty interesting. My point to the listeners is this: exercises can teach you so much. And if you play out different scenarios, you're gonna learn. I mean, I think probably, hopefully some of you, we did a pandemic exercise in 2009, and we had the swine flu, and we wrote that plan, and that plan is exactly the same plan that Michigan is using now, right now, for the pandemic with coronavirus, with COVID-19. So, exercises, having plans, trying them out, exercising them in different scenarios can really teach your team things that you'll end up using later.
That's so good. I really love that. And I will be going back more into the what you've done in terms of building the playbook for H1N1 because I think that's really relevant as well. But before we go into that, I just really want to get into the, you know, the title of this episode one, right? With the good, the bad, and the ugly. So maybe let's go right into the ugly of how you actually end up almost losing your job as a CISO. Tell us how you almost got fired.
Yeah, no, it's an important story. It's what you and I originally talked about in the book. And so it was 2003. Terry Takkaj became the CIO for the state of Michigan. Terry, I think I mentioned you
Yes, tell
earlier.
us about
Yeah,
quite
she
amazing.
became very famous. Terry went on from becoming the CIO in Michigan to becoming the CIO in California under Arnold Schwarzenegger, who was governor then. And then she went on to become the CIO for the U.S. Department of Defense. So she went from kind of a $500 million budget to a $5 billion budget U.S. to a $35 billion budget. So she was really good. Terry Takkaj knew her stuff. And she was the new CIO. I've been CISO for a couple of years. And Terry was, but she was very good, but she was very hard on the team. Well, at the time, the issue that she wanted to do, we came in, the hot issue of the time was Wi-Fi, wireless, Wi-Fi networks, like the LAN networks we're using now for this. And at the time, I was really against Wi-Fi. And the reason was I was from NSA. And I just, little side note here, that's not a hot issue anymore. Everyone uses Wi-Fi at restaurants and in homes and everything else. But at the time, that was really cutting edge. And a lot of security professionals were against it. And I had done my homework. I had reports from, NSA, FBI, Homeland Security, all these people saying it was not secure. It was a lot of bugs in it. And people would
It's
drive
like
and
now
call.
we're in cloud situation, right? It's the same
Correct.
scenario as well. Everyone moving to cloud and
Exactly.
all.
And so war driving was the hot term. Everyone would drive around and get into other people's networks. You could drive around neighborhoods and get into other people's, and people were stealing money from like Home Depot and stores. They could go in the parking lots and hack into the Wi-Fi. And this was all over the paper. So this was the hot issue. And I'd come into this meeting and she wanted to put Wi-Fi in all of the state government conference rooms. So I went in and we had a big meeting. It was a conference room, about 10 people in the room, and I was one of the people on her team. And Terry said, "Dan, tell us how we're going to do this successfully. How are we going to put Wi-Fi in the conference rooms?" Well, I had all these white papers and I had all these headlines, and I said, "Terry, I'm going to like to pass out these papers," and I handed out the sheets to everybody in the room, and I said, "We're not going to do this project. We're canceling this project. We're not going to do Wi-Fi." And you could hear the air. You could cut the air with a knife. I mean, it was silence. And Terry was just looking at me, like staring at me. And then she said, "I'd like everybody in the room to leave except for Dan." And this had never happened to me in my whole career in government. I've been in government for over 20 years at the time. And everyone just got up, and I'd never seen the government room empty so fast. They all left. So I'm sitting there with Terry Takkaj, and she's looking at me. And Terry says, "Dan, if that's your answer, you cannot be the CISO in Michigan." And I was like stunned. And I said, "What?" And she said, "Don't." She said, "I know you know your stuff. We know you have a master's degree from Johns Hopkins. You're very smart. You come from NSA. We know all that. No one's questioning your technical abilities. And I know what the headlines say. And I know what all those white papers say. I'm not going to read them." She said, "But I've been to Dow, Ford, Chrysler, and GM, General Motors. They all have Wi-Fi in their conference rooms. So what do they know that you don't know? And basically, I'm going to give you 1 week. And you've got to come up with a plan within 1 week to tell us how we're going to do Wi-Fi securely." Well, of course, I didn't lose my job, and many years later, Terry and I became very good friends. So I came back, I got back to my office. My team was like, "Did you tell them we're not going to do the Wi-Fi project?" And I said, "No, we're going to do the Wi-Fi project, and we got a week." So we called all those different companies. We learned how they did it. We implemented it in Michigan. 2 years later, we won an award for the top Wi-Fi in all 50 states. So we turned it around. But the lesson for me, Shemaine, was this. I'll be quick on this, is you got to be an enabler. You can't just say no. You've got to get to yes. securely, but you've got to get to yes, and you've got to give alternatives. And I mean, that really changed my whole approach to security. I had been a really smart cyber CSO before that, but I was always about trying to shut stuff down and stop things. And that really changed my whole outlook. And that's led me to write a book and other things, but really to become an enabler, a CISO who's like, I'm here to support the business, to offer the business side levels of risk, and then let management make the right decision.
I really love that, because it's about, you know, being a practical solution provider as well. And in this day and age, you know, everything is moving so fast, and we really need to keep up with that and show that we are a really good partner. And that's it's all about changing that mindset, right? And you have shown that very effectively, the growth and the journey you have taken. And thanks for being so real on that with us too, Dan. So I'm just conscious of time as well. I know we spoke about this earlier before, how you've built the pandemic playbook for H1N1 back then. And now, given that we're in times like this in COVID-19, so maybe there are some practical wisdom that you can share with all of the industry leaders tuning in on things that they can take note of. And I know you've prepared some stuff to share too, yes?
Yes, please. Can you put the slide up? So I'd like to just walk through some of that and just kind of wrap up with some tips for everyone. Again, we're sorry for that technical glitch there in the beginning. But yeah, so this actually came, and you can read about it, CSO Magazine. It's an article I wrote originally called Why Security Pros Fail and What You Can Do About It. You can just Google that term and you can read the article, which has got a lot of details. I don't have time to go through all seven of these, but I talked about number one, which is, you know, you can't be a disabler. You have to stop saying no and make things happen. Another thing is, I think a lot of times security pros, that second point, a lot of times what happens is, even in pandemics, is we've got the one size fits all. You have to be flexible. You have to give management alternatives. I say gold, silver, bronze. That was a motto of our team, but it could also be a platinum and a tin option if you want to give five options. But you need to be flexible. I'm going to skip through some of the other ones because I don't really have time for all of them. But, you know, number six and number seven, especially, perseverance and work-life balance. You know, being a CISO is not a marathon. It's not a sprint. It's a marathon. Our careers are a marathon. And we really need to think, maybe this is time. You know, you and I were talking about this yesterday, Shemaine, that people can spend more time with the family. And I mean, obviously, we're at home. We're working in the U.S. I know in Australia, other parts of the world, you're working from home. But that work-life balance, so many of my pros that worked for me were really great, and they did great, and then they kind of burned out and then they're gone. And so you're not helping your team if you burn out in 6 months or a year. So really having that, there's a lot of tips I have around work-life balance if you go to the article. And then number seven, especially, I want to talk about, you know, we need to be flexible in these times. What does the business need you to help them with? Think outside the box. You know, you need to do your core job very well, but offer new ideas to management. Come back, even if the idea wasn't effective maybe a couple years ago, maybe this is the time you need to be doing it now. Maybe this is the right time. My brother used to always say, making the sale is about the right time, the right place, with the right product and the right salesman and the right customer. You need all five. And a lot of times people have a great idea, but it's the wrong time. Maybe that idea you had last year, this is the right time. So work with the industry. I mean, it's great meeting you, Shemaine, and your book. I mean, on the other side of the world, who would have thought a year or two ago that you and I would be talking right now? I'm in Michigan, you're in Australia, you're working all over Asia. I mean, we all need to partner outside of our day job and think. But ultimately, you're really helping your company, you're helping your career, and you're helping the industry wider by going beyond the box. And so there's a lot of great tips in the article that you can talk about. And I know we're almost out of time, so maybe one more slide, if you could just bring the other slide up. Just want to wrap up with this thought for everybody. I know this is kind of quick, but I hear this a lot. I mentioned this earlier. I think it's really important. I hear a lot from security pros that, you don't understand, Dan, we don't have the priority in my organization. Security doesn't have the funding. And I tell people there's always projects being funded. Right now, obviously, it's probably very different projects than maybe it was back in February or January, because things have changed around the world. but get on boats leaving the dock. What I mean by that is, what projects are being funded? Are you a part of those key projects in your company? I realized that for many years in my security career, I was not even involved in the most important meetings that were happening. If there was a big new tax system in government, or a big new police, state police system, or a big new SAP deployment for a couple $100 million, I was focusing on my little security projects, but not involved in the strategic projects. So I just encourage people to get involved in those strategic projects, get on boats leaving the dock, and build those relationships. I mean, it's a big part of the, we didn't get, maybe when I come to Australia, I'll talk about building relationships, but go do lunch and build relationships with the business side of the company, because that's really where your value is going to be the greatest, is when you can, is you can really build those relationships and get involved in those key strategic projects.
Yeah, I totally agree, because we're all on the same side of the fence, and it's about really building that ecosystem together, and that we can be better together as a community, right, and as an industry. So yeah, really agree, and really appreciate you, Dan, for taking the time to be with us today for a really quick 30 minutes fireside chat. I know you have your fireside behind you.
Yeah, fireside here, guys.
Yeah. Oh, I really love this. I think it's great how we can be innovative, and you know, since everyone can't gather together, we are gathering together virtually. So with that, if you, the rest of you, can just stay on for maybe just two more minutes. That's the first episode pretty much wrapped up, and we are back on again next week for episode 2. And as part of the Mega C-Suite series, I am interviewing different C-level executives. So next week we have a CFO joining us, and she will be talking about it like cyber risk, but through the lens of the CFO, which is really interesting because she also runs lots of CFO different conversations. So I think it's good for us as industry leaders to get a better understanding of their perspectives of the different C-suite people that we are working with, and this helps us to be, you know, better equipped to support them as well. So for those who haven't registered yet, you can check that out through the link, cyberriskmeetup.com. The link is all there. And also the recording. And I think a few of you have messaged me saying that, you know, you want the recording available to share that with your colleagues or people who have not been able to join us today. So I will be putting that up on the Cyber Risk Meetup YouTube channel as well, and you can spread the word. And just want to give a big shout out to all our partners. Can't keep doing this without the support of our community partners. So a big shout out to My Security Marketplace. If you're interested in like magazines, events, conferences, or even they have really good podcasts as well, that they run different episodes and things like that, and blogs, and yeah, it's a very rich forum with a lot of content. I think Dan, you also wrote some articles for them before, so you guys can check out the My Security Marketplace. And also a big shout out to my company, PrivaSec, for being a huge supporter for all the community initiatives that I'm working on. And they do a lot of work in governance, risk and compliance, pen testing, tech assurance. So if your business has any needs, feel free to reach out to me if you have any questions. And lastly, our platinum sponsor, honestly, a big thank you to Mimecast, because they have supported us generously. And I'm just going to do a quick shout out to them. For those who don't know who Mimecast are, just a quick 10 seconds to what they are all about. Thank you for being our annual supporter. And that's all we have for today. So I will see the rest of you back in next Wednesday. We have quite a lot of people who have signed up already. I think today was incredible. We have about, nearly 200 people signing up as well. So thank you all for tuning in. Enjoy the rest of your day, whichever parts of the world you are at. Thank you once again, Dan, for your time. It's great to do this with you. And
Thank you so much. You're a great leader. Thank you, Shemaine, for having me.
No problem. My pleasure. I'll see the rest of you guys. Bye.